Case number 24-1253 et al. East Tennessee Brewing Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Regula for the petitioner, Mr. Ediger for the respondent, Mr. Johnson for the intervener.
Morning. Or afternoon now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Ryan Regula from Stella Wilmer here on behalf of petitioner East Tennessee Group. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, this case involves an appeal of an order of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which granted Intervenor Pipeline both, one, a certificate under Section 7C of the Natural Gas Act to construct an addition to the pipeline system known as the SAP project, and two, a predetermination that the pipeline could recover from its shippers the entire $390 million price tag of this project. Petitioner is not challenging the certificate for construction. Rather, we are challenging the FERC's grant of predetermination that the entirety of the $390 million cost of this project should be borne by the pipeline shippers. Petitioner has two arguments, one due process and two arbitrary and capricious. We'll focus on due process first.
But so before you get to that, my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a Section 4 proceeding is underway now.
That is correct.
And that in that proceeding, I think maybe you or at least others have argued about how these costs of this these pipeline enhancements should be allocated, obviously consistent with your current view that it should go to more recent customers. Is that correct?
There is a Section 4 case going on currently. I am not involved in it, but my understanding is correct that there are an issue, and that issue is currently regarding allocation. Mm-hmm. I'm focusing on the predetermination, that the predetermination itself should be sent to a Section 4 rate case to determine whether it should be the entire shippers, the new shippers, or the current shippers that are currently on the line.
Could the Section 4 proceeding that's underway make that same decision? That could it be decided there by the commission that the only fair way, based on all the evidence, whatever evidence comes in there, I'm not saying they would, but could they decide that, you're right, either the vast majority, 99%, or maybe even 100% has to be allocated to this group of shippers and not this group of shippers?
Your Honor, I don't think so. I understand where you're going. Because of the commission already issuing a determination on predetermination of rolled-in rates in this particular case via its order from May 2024, that price tag is already kind of baked in, the $390 million. So the rate case is my
understanding. The price tag is there, but you said you're not challenging the pipeline construction. The price tag's there, but and the fact that it's going to be paid by existing customers, as opposed to people who wish to come in, maybe, but by existing customers, that seems to already be baked in. But which existing customers will pay, or which will pay the bulk of this expense, that's exactly what the Section 4 proceeding is going to sort out, correct?
Yes.
And if the Section 4 proceeding ended up saying that your clients ended up paying 1% and newer shippers end up paying 99%, would that not potentially solve your problem here?
Yeah, I think my distinction would be the allocation of costs versus the total sum of $390 million. And our argument is that the $390 million price tag, there was other methods that could be used, could be evaluated to get to that dollar figure out before we even get to the allocation. So I'm bifurcating the two issues.
I thought your argument all in this case as well was that we shouldn't have to pay, other people should have to pay.
Correct.
I didn't see an argument in briefs here that they got the math wrong.
Understood, but in terms of the Section 4 kind of allocation that you're kind of getting at, I just want to make the distinction that the Section 4 case that's happening elsewhere, it's more or less regarding the allocation. You're right. We're arguing that we don't think we should have to pay the $390 million, or the shippers should not be that are currently on the pipeline. I'm in agreement.
And could that, you're arguing that in that proceeding?
We are.
And if you win, I mean, obviously you hope to win,
I would hope to win, yes.
You prevail?
Yes.
And everything's fine.
I would agree, Your Honor.
Nothing about this case. It doesn't matter what happened in this case.
Can you also challenge under Section 5?
Possibly, Your Honor. The issue is that we already currently have an order on the books.
Order that says we'll go to a Section 4 proceeding and figure out how much you pay there. And you can make your representations about we should pay zero or 1% or whatever, if you think there's some small part that's fair for you to pay. And you can do that there and you might win. And my understanding also is that proceedings on pause for settlement negotiations.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Which, if successful, would also obviate any need to decide this case or any injury you assert from this case.
Correct. And I think for our purpose.
So why should we decide this until we know what happens in the Section 4 proceeding?
We have an order currently enforceable that the FERC has.
Enforceable. It says, look, we've made a judgment here that this should be paid by customers, that this enhances the sure. Pipeline capacity and service quality for all customers. So it'll be rolled in rates. But all FERC said was, but who pays exactly how much? We'll sort that out later. And I raise this because you were about to start about due process, and I don't understand why this Section 4 proceeding isn't part of the due process you get here.
Sure, Your Honor. And if the court would be inclined to go that direction, that's a fair ruling. I think from our perspective,
whether we should or am I misunderstanding things? I mean, that's sort of two things. One, should we wait, especially if you're going to resolve it by settlement? But two, I'm also asking, so that's one you can answer. But the second question is, don't we have to factor in for purposes of your due process concerns that you're getting still more, FERC said at the time, this is not the end of the story. There's going to be a Section 4 proceeding, and you can make all the showings you want in the world in that Section 4 proceeding about you guys not, your group, your client not having to pay much. So that's part of the due process you get.
Understood, Your
Honor.
No
one sent you a bill yet.
No one has sent us a bill, no. No.
So can you answer my practical question? Should we wait? And then can you tell, then as you address your due process argument, how you have a due process concern, given that you're still in the middle of getting your process through the Section 4 proceeding?
Sure. Answering your initial question first, it's our position that you should rule on the issue now rather than at the Section 4 rate hearing, only because we've gone through the proceeding and and FERC has already made the determination via the SAP application way back that was filed in 2023, had a final order that came out a year later, that the pipeline has relied upon in terms of constructing. We are not challenging the construction of the pipeline addition, but we are challenging the allocation, or I should say the price tag of this project. And the feasibility of that $390 million price tag. So we're kind of, if we're waiting to the Section 4 rate case, we're behind the eight ball already.
So your the process argument?
Sure. Regarding the due process argument, petitioners contend that the FERC and the pipeline have stonewalled petitioners' data requests and, in fact, denied our due process.
Your main argument on due process is that FERC acted unconstitutionally or at least arbitrarily in granting this order before you had the CEII information.
Yes.
But there's a certificate proceeding, and the applicant has to put in all the information supporting the application that FERC requires. And you intervened and had a chance to put in whatever information you want to require. And your complaint is that you didn't have access to agency information wholly apart from the record of the adjudication. Sounds like you're saying there's a constitutional entitlement to discovery. Doesn't seem hugely plausible to me.
Sure. And just taking a step back, We're looking for the CEI information because we want to test the allegation that the pipeline has alleged that there's this loss of displacement gas, and that's actually happening. So we want to be able to compare the historical numbers to understand the progression flows and whether or not that this project or the $390 million cost of this project is...
None of it is in the record of this adjudication.
Sure. But we have requested the information, shortly after the SAP project, the application was filed.
And the request was not made on the docket such that FERC would have known that right away. But then later on, you got the information that you asked for.
The in FERC's May 2024 letter response to us, granting us the CEI information, they acknowledged that we requested it in June 5th of 2023, so a year earlier. So by the time we got the information, which was in fact August of 2024, the SAP order approving the application for the pipeline addition, that had already been approved. So we have not had an opportunity to look at the information until after the fact.
Is that form 567 information also in the exhibit G's, essentially the data flow information?
Yeah, so there's a distinction to be made. And let me rephrase my yes. The Exhibit G contains a snapshot of two times of the gas flows, once before construction and another after the construction of the SAP. This snapshot is insufficient to provide or to demonstrate historical patterns or the progression of gas flows to determine the need for the project. And so Exhibit G was filed with the SAP application, but it was filed under seal of confidentiality. Our Form 567, the CEI information, that provides peak and average gas flows on an annual basis. And we first requested the 2022 Form 567, which was delayed 14 months before we received it. And then we subsequently requested the 2023 version as well, which that was provided almost instantaneously. So to answer your question, the Exhibit G is not the same as Form 567. There are definitely differences.
But FERC did ask for this annual flow data subsequent to the proceeding, but it at least is explained, like they utilize this information that you're requesting.
In your application in terms of in approving the certificate?
Yes.
Whether FERC used it or not, it wasn't part of the record that we were able to see. I mean, that's part of our complaint. There's information out there that we haven't seen that we are entitled as interveners to be able to assess.
Even now, between the Form 557 and the Exhibit Gs, you're saying there's additional information?
No, the information now has been provided, and it was provided after, our deemed denial to our request for rehearing.
But is that information explained in FERC's later orders?
No. To my knowledge, Your Honor, it's not upon recollection.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The petitioners are going to contend that the stonewalling of our data request, which we have described, provided us as an opportunity to make our case, and that we as the petitioners failed to avail ourselves of the opportunity of that information, and we were provided all the process that we were entitled. But FERC misses the point, because this case turns on the principle that due process delayed is due process denied. And as mentioned, we didn't receive the information until months after the SAP certificate was already approved by FERC. In this case, the record demonstrates that the opportunity in which FERC...
You don't care about this. You told us you don't care about the SAP certificate being approved. You just care about who pays for it.
Well, the SAP certificate had two elements. One, to construct the addition of the pipeline system, but it also had the predetermination that the pipeline could recover from its shippers the entire $390 million price tag of the project. We care about the price tag.
Okay, so you don't care about the price tag. You care about the allocation.
Both, yes.
Well, nowhere in your brief do you challenge the price tag. I see no arguments about they spend too much money.
Sure. Okay.
I keep getting confused when you talk about challenging the price tag. You're challenging the allocation.
Yeah, I suppose I'm baking the two of them into one, but I understand your point, okay. Your Honor.
And so you got the information.
Well, first of all, when you asked FERC for the information, when you filed a request with FERC, did you tell that office that there was urgency?
Well, we made the initial request in June of 2023, so shortly after. So
urgent, there was an ongoing proceeding you needed it for?
We went through the appropriate channels. I don't believe we, you know, requested it being urgent.
Okay. All right. And you make a lot about the delay, but my understanding is that you had to get FERC had to just go through a security clearance process to release this information because it's protected information. And so it's not like you just file and they hand it over to you. They had to make a security clearance determination, right? So it's not something that's going to happen super fast.
I agree with Your Honor.
Okay. So, so are you saying that the amount of time it took for FERC to produce the document was inordinate?
I would agree with that, yes.
It was inordinate?
No, I'm sorry. It was excessive.
From the usual course.
It was, yeah, different from the usual course.
How long does it usually take to get this clearance and document?
I don't know, but I could provide you two examples. We requested, in this case, it took 14 months, and then requested the 2023 CI information, and it took a matter of days.
Mm-hmm. But had you already gotten the security clearance by then?
That is correct.
Well, that makes a big difference.
It does.
All right.
Your Honor, regarding the due process, and just summing up before shifting over to arbitrary and capricious, you know, it's our contention that by not having this information, we lack the ability to meaningfully and timely participate in the SAP application proceedings. And by not having that information,
you said that you didn't say.
I'm sorry.
What would you? You've had months, years now to look at this document. What would you have said at that hearing and make in the record? But you didn't say. Now that you've looked at the document, you've had plenty of time to look at it, what would you have said that you didn't get to say?
Your Honor, I would argue first, before answering your question, that it's a bit of a red herring in terms of we didn't get the information timely, but if we did have the information, we would have been able to test the loss of displacement gas.
You had plenty of time to do that, right?
After the deemed denial and after we filed a petition.
I'm asking you to tell me what you would have said that you wouldn't have said, that you didn't have the opportunity to say.
Sure. We would have tested the ability of the pipeline to have the appropriate capacity, whether it was.
And you would have tested it, and what would that test have shown? You've had plenty of time to do that test.
Yeah, I don't know what the test would have shown.
I mean, due process has a prejudice requirement.
Yeah, and I would argue that our.
What is your prejudice?
Well, the prejudice was ultimately the price tag and the allocation is what we would argue.
What you have to show is how the absence of this particular document prejudiced you in that it contained information you would have provided, material information you would have provided had you had it in time. And all I hear from you is we would have done an analysis.
Correct. Yes. The Form 567 information is not a red. It's not a smoking gun document. It's more information that we're able to test to determine whether or not that the displacement from the gas displacement was as the pipeline was alleging.
Mm-hmm. Did you test?
We did not test.
Why not?
I don't have an answer on why we did not test.
Okay. More questions? All right. We'll give you a couple more minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Scott Ettinger for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Judge Millett, I think I want to go to the question you were just asking about whether the work has been done, and I want to refer specifically to pages 21 to 22 of the reply brief, where there's a long block quotation of, I think, a lot of the promises that we just heard more of. And what I just want to point out here is that when the person was typing up those words in September of 2024, figuratively, Form 567 was right next to the keyboard. They had it, and they could have made the assertions there, which leads into the primary point that we raise in response to the petition, is that this commission, this agency, takes the rehearing process seriously. And when the issue came to the commission's attention that CEII hadn't been disseminated quickly, the commission acted. And that's the May 29th, 2024 letter. That letter comes a little over a month after the rehearing request, and I might add, before any paper was filed with this court. The commission issued that letter in order to accommodate the desire of the shipper petitioners here to make the argument. As the commission pointed out in the rehearing order, nothing happened after the May letter. And so the commission issued a series of letters subsequently, giving the opportunity for the shippers to make the case that Form 567 somehow detracted from the predetermination determination that was made in the certificate order. By their own admission, that never occurred. This case shouldn't be here today. We should have been able to resolve this issue before the agency without taking more time today of the course time. And that's the way, that's what we believe the Natural Gas Act provides, Section 19, as interpreted by Allegheny at pages. I have it in front of me, but Allegheny clearly recognized that one of the arguments we responded to in Allegheny was that, well, these are complicated cases, we need more time. And the response was, well, you have more time. On the deemed denial date that occurred, the commission
goes forward until you file the record.
Precisely, Your Honor. And that's what the commission did here. I think this was provided in the Natural Gas Act, and those opportunities were provided. And I also want to point out, it's interesting about the Exhibit G. That was on file from day one. So that's on the record. And I just want to make some, maybe talk a little bit about what the difference is between Exhibit G and the 587. And the commission talked about that at paragraph 5, note 11. This is at JA 417. And Form 567 is a more system-wide information, whereas Exhibit G, which is required by commission regulation, this is 18 CFR 157.14A8, And I think we appended that to our brief. It's very detailed information, and you can understand why it would be helpful to the commission to have that information, because it requires the pipeline to show us what the system looks like before the application and what it looks like after. That allows the commission to make the determination on whether the project is needed. Form 567 does something different. It's an annual update of the system, and it allows all companies have to make the filing. It allows the commission to stay on top of what the sort of big picture of the natural gas industry looks like. And again, 587 not required by commission regulations to be put on the record. And what I just want to get back to Exhibit G. The shippers never asked for it until well after the rehearing deadline. So they were flying blind through this process. This is the information required by commission regulation to be put on the record, and shippers never asked for it until well after the rehearing request. And they did so by a process under G4 of the commission's regulations that govern CEII data. In our brief, we talked about The differences between G4 and G5 and the exhibit G was released. It's unfortunate that G is used twice here, but I'm sorry for that confusion. But that pipeline released the exhibit G information under G4 of 388.13, and that was all on the record. And if counterfactually, had pipeline for some reason refused to do that, they would have or thought that that wasn't appropriate, they would have made it, they would have had to make a filing before the commission, and then the commission would have had to rule on it. And then that, of course, would become an issue that, that could be subject to judicial review. By contrast, this form is not on the record. It has never been on the record, and it's not on the record to this day. And I think what we just heard is the My friends for the shippers don't even know for sure that it supports their position. And we have no way of testing that because, as I say, it's not on the record. They requested it through G5 of the CEI regulations, which was appropriate. And they went through the process of asking through the CEI coordinator to get that information, and eventually it was released. As the commission points out in the rehearing order, that release occurs after the certificate order, and that's why the commission provided the process.
Can I ask you about the status of the Section 4 rate proceeding? One, assuming that they decide today to finally decide what they want to do with this information, could they use that to argue about allocation in the Section 4 rate proceeding? If they think this document they finally got helps them with that argument as to whether they should have to pay much, if anything. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to finish my sentence. I think you already got the idea, but can't they argue about how much they should pay, if anything, in the Section 4 proceeding?
It is an ongoing proceeding. I think if I can answer it this way, the presumption, the predetermination has been made in this case, in the certificate order, and we're asking the court to affirm that. And and that is a sort of high level determination that existing shippers are responsible for this project because it helps them, reliability, flexibility. Now, within that, the equitable allocation of those costs among existing shippers, that could be a live issue. I don't want to get too far in that. I don't know what's going on exactly in Section 4, what the issue, the Section 4 case, and what the issues are, but that those are potential issues that could come up. But what's happened here is again, a very top-level determination, presumption to be applied in the next case. And I think we cited the Texas Eastern case.
Is the presumption that every shipper will pay something, but the Section 4 proceeding will decide who pays how much?
I think that sounds accurate. It's more granular, more detailed, and it'll be part of the tariff.
I think you said?
I'm sorry.
And it's sort of an equitable analysis?
Yes.
Was there any reason that you denied the rehearing request first and then gave the data?
I do believe so. I think it took the commission some time to decide what was appropriate. I think that it was an evolving process. So and I think it became apparent from the rehearing request what was necessary is that the commission believed that information needed to be released, and the commission, I think the only way to read this rehearing or the rehearing order is to realize that the commission believed that the group needed an opportunity to comment, to receive the information and to comment on it, and to get that argument before the commission. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments that they've made about how the commission wouldn't, like this was some kind of trap and the commission wasn't going to really take that seriously. But I think the existence of the letters themselves belie that argument. And in addition, had the commission, they really followed through, had they really taken the information and made real substantive arguments like they promised they can, and then the commission had rejected it, we'd be having a different conversation today. And I'd be standing here trying to defend that. And by their argument or their assumptions of their argument, I'd have a hard time with those arguments. I'd have a hard time today. And so I think the better reading is that the 567 is not relevant, not helpful, and that's why it hasn't been ever put on record. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the intervener now.
Your Honors, and may it please the court, Joshua Johnson for respondent intervener East Tennessee Natural Gas. I think that the group's argument today has significantly narrowed the issues before the court. If I'm understanding the group correctly, their position seems to be that they are not challenging a project that benefits existing shippers. They just don't want those existing shippers as a whole to have to pay for the project. But that's not how the Natural Gas Act works. Under the Natural Gas Act, natural gas companies can recover their costs and a reasonable rate of return through the rates that they charge. For this particular project, there's no dispute.
I'm not sure that at this point, if there's going to be an allocation proceeding, and if they end up getting happy there, that they really care if some other shippers have to pick up a big tab.
But in this proceeding, and I agree that there's a separate question about allocation in the Section 4 proceeding.
FERC did not decide in this case. FERC did not decide that in this case.
Correct. That's absolutely
said,
right.
Sure, we'll roll in. This isn't some outside customer who wants to come in and should pay for this thing to connect to their plant wherever it is. This is something that just sort of the benefits the whole pipeline for everybody who's already on it. But you all go figure out later in a Section 4 proceeding who pays how much.
And I have no dispute with anything that you just said, Judge Millett, but the group in this proceeding is still challenging the roll-in predetermination. Mm-hmm. They're asking the court to vacate that. So they're mm-hmm. asking the court to undermine the basic decision that the existing shippers, as opposed to, I suppose, the pipeline, mm-hmm. Should pay for the costs of this project. And the court, I think, can easily reject that argument and say that any issues about cost allocation should be left to the Section 4 proceeding. That's actually what FERC said in its certificate order.
Do you have any update on the status of the Section 4 proceeding?
Section 4 proceedings are very lengthy proceedings, so I still think that in terms of the life of the proceeding, we're still pretty early, and in terms of the parties defining what arguments are going to be presented. I would say that I think that the court should issue a decision here, that there is a ripe dispute about the basic fundamental question of whether the roll-in predetermination should stand. And what that clarifies is that existing shippers as a whole will cover the costs of the project through new rates and in a rate proceeding. And the court, we believe, should deny the petition for review, allow that roll-in predetermination to stand, and then any questions about allocation or attribution can be left to the Section 4 proceeding. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you 2 minutes for a rebuttal, Mr. Regula.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very quickly, following up on the line of statements by the intervener pipeline, talking about the rolled-in predetermination, one of our problems, and this goes just very quickly to our arbitrary and capricious argument, is that the FERC elevated one factor of its policy statement, and that's treating the absence of new capacity as automatically justifying the rolled-in rates. And it disregarded other factors in the policy statement, specifically policy statement at pages 19 to 22, which we also said in our brief regarding abandoning balancing, disregarding prudence and cost causation principles. And to be frank, FERC didn't weigh the purported reliability benefits against rate impacts and compare the appropriate costs. So as it pertains, and I understand I've got just a minute or two, I just wanted to flag that again for our arbitrary and capricious, that the policy statement and how it is applied for the predetermination is part of our contention as well, which will not be resolved at the rate, at the Section 4 rate hearing. As my friends on the other side have mentioned, the predetermination is...
You got a forfeiture problem on your policy statement argument.
Yes. And then just very quickly, tying the loop regarding us receiving the data. We received the data on August 16, 2024. We were given 2 weeks to respond. I'm sorry, 2 weeks later on August 28th, we were told to respond to the data request. Well, 2 days after that, FERC granted the certificate to construct. So as we're kind of looking at the information, the amount of meaningful and timely participation by FERC's own actions.
You're not challenging the pipeline and its construction. So that nothing about construction.
Correct.
Affects. Okay. So I'm not sure why that matters.
Understood, Your Honor. That's all I have. Thank you, Your Honor. And we would request that the court remand the predetermination of rates. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Thank you to both counsel.